Hello and welcome back to the Fowler Hour. Today I'm joined by Michael Pender, aka Peanut Free Panda. You've probably seen his little mascot running around Instagram with the knight riding the panda as his logo. And today Michael and I are going to be talking about the logo design process, how he got into it from a full-time job, and also understanding how his day job as a media planner has helped inform him for his design process. One of the things we talk about a lot on this show is making sure that you have a research-driven process so that you can actually create design work that's effective and not just beautiful. So Michael's going to run through some of the things he does for that today to make effective design work. And yeah, let's jump in right to the show. And we're live recording with Peanut Free Panda today. Michael Pender, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you, Connor?
Really good. As I said, just before we went live, I've literally shoved a sandwich into my mouth and I feel like that was a bad idea thinking about it now. But
got to fuel up.
Yeah, well, exactly. Talking's a really hard job. So Michael's joining us today from Boston. And he's kind of kindly done this before work as well, which is an absolute trooper. For doing so. So Michael, Peanut Free Panda. Firstly, where does that name come from? I want to know. I've seen that username around. I've seen your icon and your mascot and your logo. It's fabulous. But where does that all come from?
It's pretty simple. My last name's Panda. And so my dad's also Michael Panda. So growing up, he had the nickname Panda, which is a very unoriginal nickname given to him by his peers, I'm sure. But then that kind of got passed down to me. And I also have a peanut allergy, so I was trying to find a unique name to distinguish myself on Instagram and social media. And it really just started before I even had a vision for where I wanted to take my own design hustle. I just thought it was kind of funny, and I went through a couple different icons that were a little disparate before I actually put in the work in a couple of months to develop the personal brand. So
because your logo that you're using at the moment is a knight riding a panda, which... when I first saw it, I was like, this is probably my favorite personal brand mark I've seen in a long time, just because the way you've structured it is so unusual. And the idea of the two being together is, I mean, you wouldn't think of a man riding a bear into battle, let alone the name Peanut Free Panda. But it's kind of funny as well that it's a little bit of a family trait being called Panda. It runs literally in the family.
Yeah. And while my father did not do design, it's the name kind of got passed down. And I went through a bunch of different kind of ideation phases and, you know, started drawing and put it down for a few months and then came back to it. And it was, you know, for anyone who's gone through the process of personal branding, it's harder than any other client, as I'm sure you know, Connor. So that took a little bit of time to figure out, but I tried to do something unique and funky. And actually, if the inspiration came from the Disney movie Mulan.
Oh yeah.
When the Mushu dresses up in the night in the samurai costume and hops up on the panda to scare off the... Yeah. So that's the inspiration came.
Little bit of Disney just slightly injected into there.
Yeah,
as well.
Just a little really Easter like egg. That. Yeah.
That's really cool. So as Peanut Free Panda, as your design side hustle, what do you do with Peanut Free Panda?
So as you noted before, since I work full time, that's pretty much, it started as an outlet for my doodles and drawings. When I first started the account, I hadn't really gone into the branding space yet. It was just an outlet to post some of the things I was working on Inkscape and just some of the things that I was doing in my free time. But then like little by little, I got people reaching out for logos, or a good friend of mine who had encouraged me to start the account in the first place had a couple of contacts for people who needed logos, and I wouldn't dare share them with the world now, but that was the first snowball, if you will, for how it kind of grew. And so it didn't start off as a I'm gonna go out and do branding as my side hustle. It kind of evolved from that.
So what do you do full time at the moment then for the people at home?
Yeah, so I'm a media planner at a small media agency. So to put that into different terms, it's essentially a small advertising agency that only places media. So, you know, digital and social, we buy broadcast television, we place out of home billboards, radio spots, pretty much anything you can think of where the client says, we have this many dollars and in our marketing budget, and we need you to help us spend it. to get our message out there. So we partner with the clients like brands, and we also work with creative agencies who actually develop the spots in the creative. So I'm on the other side of that.
So do you feel that it's given you a bit more of an insight into the business side of design or business side of creative in general, being having kind of this duality?
Yes. Oddly enough, I'd say that working in media planning and strategy has been the single most helpful thing to my design career.
Why would you say that? What's benefited you?
Yeah, like you wouldn't think that would be incredibly valuable, just, you know, since placing media and kind of creating are on opposite ends of the spectrum, but they really do come full circle because the media and the creative have to work together. And while I have no part in the creative space of thing, the creative side of things in my current role, they really do work together, and there's a lot that has to happen between the two of them so they can talk to make sure that it's the right message at the right time for the right person. And so doing a lot of the upfront research and competitive analysis and doing research on the target market and looking at how they use media and what their psychographics are, how they think, what they do, I've been able to take that and apply that to my design work. So much of that is at the upfront stage of the design process. And so that can get overlooked sometimes, I think, because it's easy to just hop into Illustrator or hop into your sketchbook and just start drawing down ideas. But if you don't even know who you're trying to reach, then it's all for naught.
It's really interesting because I was literally talking to someone about brand strategy yesterday, Steph Hammerlink over at the Let's Talk Branding podcast. He was saying the same thing but it's interesting to see how you take it from kind of the advertising background and his is strictly from branding. But I assume there must be such an overlap in the way you describe it in terms of you've got to find the balance between the creative and the strategy was exactly what he said as well. So when it comes down to your client process, do you think that's impacted the way you talk to clients when you do some of your logo work or your identity work outside of your main job?
Absolutely. Yeah. And similar to how I just said about it's easy for us designers to just hop right into the software, hop right into our sketchbook. Similarly, it's easy for the client to just hop right into the idea and what they want it to look like and what the vision they have is. And so don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong at all with having a vision for the brand. That's a good thing. But it's crucial to be able to take that step back. And sometimes clients don't do that unless they're encouraged. And I don't want to say pushed because, you know, that is kind of what we're doing, but it's, I like encourage. It's a little bit better because we really are a partner. So it's kind of like, hey, I bring this valuable perspective that you might not be thinking about, or you may have thought about, but kind of got sidetracked by the design portion of it or what your identity is going to look like. So it's really an important part of that partnership to be able to say, hey, here's a lens that we can look at this through. That's not just from a visual standpoint.
I say, because that when you explain that to a client and you sit down and say, okay, well, you'd like to invest in maybe getting a new logo design for this. And then you go, I also work in advertising and I can do the strategy and we can figure that out, the main portion of that. Do you think that's maybe given you a bit more of a leg up going into this industry? Because you can see it from both sides. So obviously it's impacted and helped you with your clients, but do you think you've kind of like jumped in at the higher end, like into the deep end?
I wouldn't say that just because, I, as I said, this kind of evolved, well, as does anything, but this kind of, it wasn't from the get-go that I was, you know, kind of had all my ducks in a row for how I'm going to position myself and how I'm going to charge and how I'm going to approach clients. That's kind of, I figured that out along the way. And so I wouldn't say necessarily that it's kind of elevated me, but it's certainly given me some firmer ground to stand on. And certainly when I talk about that capability and that, what I can bring to the table before we start talking about price and scope and everything like that, it kind of lays a good groundwork to justify what I charge for my services, you know, because I bring more to the table than just the design piece. And so it's not something I charge for separately, like marketing strategy or anything. I'm not that capable in that respect, but it certainly does a lot to inform how I approach things.
So it gives you the opportunity to say, well, the reasoning we have made these choices is because of X, Y, and Z, and you can actually back that up. So you're using more of your problem-solving side of your mind and your creative side of your mind rather than doing kind of what you describe. Like the people who would just be given a brief and then do the work and then hand it back, that's someone I would describe as, say, as a technician rather than a creative or a problem solver, or even just the general professional term. Because when you can do that strategy, as you say, you can sit down and lay that foundation, that groundwork, then that leads to more trust, it leads to more transparency, it leads to a better outcome.
Absolutely. And that's I like what you said about not being so much of a technician, but as a creator. And it's, you know, in along a similar vein, we're not just order takers. We're really the experts in the matter. So that's why they come to us in the first place, right? So if you're, no one wants, I mean, some people do want, but we don't, most of us don't want to just be a monkey behind a keyboard cranking out designs and handing it back to the client with no thought into it. So they're coming to us for our expertise. So it's on us. That's a burden that we bear to have to actually like put the thought into it and turn around something that'll work for them and is not just, that just doesn't look good, you know?
So as someone who has a full-time job and then also manages your design stuff on the side as well, what were some of the main challenges you came across when you first started picking this up? Obviously, you said it was kind of a slow ride in. You weren't expecting to get any client work or anything like that. So when that first one came through the door, what did that feel like for you since it was just a side hustle when you started?
Yeah, so the first one was like, oh, that's funny. Someone saw my random doodles and wants a logo. All right, I could take a crack at that. I'd done some random logo stuff on the side, but nothing for any real brands or anything. So it was exciting. You know, I got to potentially put something forth that would be seen in the real world or actually used and enjoyed by people. I have no idea if it ever was or ever made it out there, but the first couple were like, okay, I'll just spend some time, at night after work, just kind of messing around on the computer or putting some thought into it, sketching during the day or whatnot. But then that was, you know, that was probably 5 years ago at this point. But then, you know, social life, girlfriend, everything, like normal life kind of, picked up pace as I got older and kind of moved away from that job and into a new job. And it's a lot more challenging to budget your time, especially as I get better and better. The better clients start coming in, whether by my own searching or outreach, or by them coming to me. And it's definitely I had to kind of learn how to swim while I was in the water when it came to budgeting time and budgeting and like kind of managing the influx of projects that were coming in. Because right now I have too many projects that make outreach, or too many clients that make outreach, that I just can't take on, because I like to maintain some semblance of a social life and some free time for myself that's not work. So it's a challenge for sure, but I make it work.
Yeah, and when it comes to managing that time, obviously you can only do so much. And what did you realize straight away that you needed to kind of block in some buffer for that social time, or was that something you learned the hard way?
Kind of a little more on the hard way. Not anything detrimental, but I realized that like I was spending a lot more time in my room on my computer, just cranking out projects, and I was like, this is what I love to do, but I think I need a little bit more of a healthy balance.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't realize that. A lot of people, myself included, will just spend, or used to spend, 10 plus hours a day just designing or just sat at a desk. And not only is it bad for your physical health, it's also really bad for your mental health to not go outside, to not see other people, to not explore the rest of the world.
Right. And, you know, I'd be at my desk from 9 to 6 and then from 7 to 11 at night, you know? So it's like, it's a little unsustainable. And that's the challenge too, is that in order to either try to make the jump into full-time freelancing, you have to build up a client base and a good process and method of working to be able to make that jump. But while working full-time and trying to do that, that's they're kind of like two trains running at the same time, because you kind of have to build enough volume on the side while still, you know, maintaining your full-time job. But the, where's the tipping point for making the switch? And that doesn't apply to everyone. That was just kind of a tangent, but.
Yeah. But does that apply to you? Do you feel like you'd want to make this kind of a full-time thing at some point in the future, if you could?
If I could, yeah, I could see myself doing that. You know, as I was just saying, it's kind of challenging to build all the constructs around it, for me at least, to be comfortable with the full-time leap. And just thinking of all the things that have to go into it, like I'd really want to put the time in to update my website and add new projects and really build out more case studies for work I've done. Because a lot of that gets put on the back burner when I'm, since I'm, I do work, you know, from like 9 to 7, 9 to 6, 9 to 7 every day. I don't always have time to finish building that out, because I'm on to the next project. So I have a lot on the back burner that I'm trying to get around to building out. But in terms of freelancing, I could see myself doing it at some point. I don't know when. I wish I had a better vision for it, but
yeah, having that kind of vision is difficult. I struggle with that as well. If you ask me any kind of goals for like a year out, a year, 2 years out, my brain is just like, I can't, there's too many things happening at once. There's too many things going on. I can't even consider what's going to happen. Like, I have to make a list for what I'm doing tomorrow, let alone 6 months from now.
Yeah. So,
and I do this full time. So to the way you're suggesting this, it sounds to me like you have that grander vision that you want to achieve. And if going full time freelance is that, then you're doing it the right way, overlapping it in kind of doing as much as you can to not completely burn yourself out, but also to keep that consistent flow of clients and eventually be able to charge a rate that overtakes your day job. Because that's one of the things that whenever I've spoken to people who have done kind of a similar situation to yourself, is that when they start earning more or the same money in half the time in that 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. or whatever, that like half a day's work, technically, they're earning more or the same than what they did at their day job, it becomes like a no-brainer. It becomes just a switch and you're like, oh shit, I can actually just drop one thing and then do that instead.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be certainly a compelling argument for being able to make the switch into full-time freelancing if you can make half the money in half the time.
Well, I was going to say, like, money's a pretty compelling a pretty compelling tool for most people.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like I've gone back and forth on that too, about you know, full-time freelancing, studio work. It's just a lot to figure out, but certainly benefits of both. And kind of for me, being self-taught, I definitely need to kind of put in the extra work to get those, as I said, kind of like the constructs down and the building the skill set on my own, and, you know, learning InDesign and After Effects when I have really no need for them at the moment. So that's another thing too, is trying to like be as proficient as you can in things that you don't even need to use on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, that's actually something, that's a good transition there. Thank you for that.
I knew your script, so.
Yeah, we've got the next thing I wanted to ask you about was, on your website, it says you started using Inkscape now, and you kind of taught yourself using Inkscape. So for people at home who might not know what Inkscape is, I believe it's free open source vector design software. So it's very similar in output and execution to something like Adobe Illustrator. But as far as I'm aware, the features are not quite the same. Obviously, it's a free tool, so the development is kind of slower. But generally, it kind of gives you the basis to learn design or to learn vector artworking anyway. So how did you get started with that, Michael? Why was it just because it was free that you picked up Inkscape, or?
Yeah, so I mean, I had been drawing since I was little. So I'd always had a creative side to me, but in college, my dad had an old, my dad's an IT director. So he had an old laptop that he had at work, my school one broke, and he gave me another laptop to use in the interim. And on it, he was like, oh, there's this program called Inkscape on there. It's, I don't know, whoever had it before, you know, had this program on there. And there's also one called GIMP too. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's like the Inkscape of Photoshop.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he was like, oh, just give it a shot. So I like hopped in and started messing around. I was like, oh, this is cool. It's the actual, it's graphics software. This is Illustrator. And it really, it got the job done. I used that for 4 years.
Oh, geez, wow.
Yeah. And, but you know, being on the Adobe side now, looking back at the functionality, it's like, you can't do the round corners or the, like the round points, you know, the, I forget what it's called when you can pull all the corners and round them at once. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. So you have to like add nodes and then draw the curves and things for everything you wanted to do.
Use all the proper Beziers. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so it's, yeah, it was a lot different and it's more tedious. I'm like pretty sure I have residual carpal tunnel from like being on my laptop with a little claw hand trying to do all of that. But, yeah, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, hey, it's like you know, it's kind of the output that matters and it's not really how you get there. I mean, to an extent, I suppose, but what I found is that it got the job done because it let me get what was in my head out to the world, out on a computer, out on a file. You know, I got to more or less take whatever was in my brain and make it real.
So what was it like when you made that switch over to Adobe instead? Because whenever I think about people, I think Inkscape and GIMP are great softwares if you want to like try it out, but I can't imagine using that software for 4+ years and with any kind of substantial kind of projects. But there are so many other options out there that I don't think I've even touched just because Adobe is the like industry standard. Do you think that's kind of a fair point for it to be on, or are there other tools out there that could be better?
No, yeah, good? No, I do not recommend using Inkscape if you can afford Adobe.
At least not in a professional way, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, right. No, it's fine. And it helped me get started. And I think, you know, I think where you're going with this is that, that Adobe is the gold standard, and it wasn't necessarily from a, like I can't afford this standpoint, but I didn't want to make the investment into Adobe when at the time I was still kind of like on the side hustle side of things, you know? So doing it in my free time, I was like, do I need to buy Adobe if I can make this output in Inkscape? But, I mean, when I switched over, it was obviously mind blowing and never looked back, because of just the functionality, the professionalism, and just the ease of things you can do, and how just even how you export files and how you package things up and have the programs can talk to one another. It's just a whole different world.
Yeah, I can imagine, Gurmit, to your point of rounded corners. I can't imagine like having to draw all of those rounded corners individually. It's actually something that Aaron Draplin was talking about when I saw him do a workshop, or it was I can't remember where it was. I think it was a workshop in Birmingham where I went to see him, and he was explaining he used to do exactly the same thing as you on Inkscape, Michael, where he would draw every single handle for all the curves or overlay circles on it. And he said that one day he went to the Adobe Max conference and he was talking to the developers and he was like, I need something to solve this problem, because you spend hundreds of hours just doing corner curves. And apparently he's the reason that we now have that drag tool on the anchors for the corners.
I actually heard a similar story. A couple of designer friends of mine and here in Boston had have a group called the Bay State Design Shop. And they actually brought Aaron Draplin in to do a talk. And they were talking to him too, and they said that he was the one to get those corners. So
God bless you, Aaron. Yeah. We'll put in a little bit of a shill for Draplin just there. But
yeah.
Oh goodness me, that it's those little functionalities, those little tools. I mean, even something as simple as you say, the way that the software talks to each other. Or you can at least open things in different softwares and it's mildly compatible. So thinking about obviously what you learned using Inkscape was the basics, the kind of getting through the original stuff. Do you think it matters at all? Do you think you could achieve the same results if you really put the effort into Inkscape, if you really wanted to, compared to Adobe, or is there just no comparison?
I think you could. I think it would obviously take a while. It would take a lot longer and probably some more frustration. But if you were able to learn the ins and outs of Inkscape and how And maybe I think also to what I learned from what I've learned from Adobe is how to like make shapes that can make other shapes. So if you were in Inkscape trying to round every single corner, you could instead, you know, combine a couple of circles with a triangle and, you know, kind of get the, what's the word I'm looking for? Use a couple of shapes to make a different shape and then use that shape in something else, you know, to make
like intersect them.
Yeah. Sorry. That's about still early in the morning. So try and like intersect a couple of shapes to get something to then use elsewhere that already has the rounded corner. If you use a couple of circles and then, so there would be workarounds for that. It would certainly not be as fast as Adobe. I think then from a strictly like vector standpoint, I think you could do almost the exact same thing. Like it has layer functionality for more illustration work. It has, you know, intersect, divide paths. It has pretty much almost everything. I haven't used it in years. I'd have to go back to confirm that. But I think from a perspective of getting what's in your head out onto something, it clearly worked for me a little bit. So
yeah, but that's just a powerful tool in of itself. The fact you can take something that is an idea in your head and put it into a software or translate it even just on pencil to paper, obviously you can use pencil to paper all day, every day, but when you can take it digitally and manipulate it in exactly the way that you want, that is such a gratifying feeling to begin with, especially when you start learning. Mm-hmm. And I went back through some of your profile, like as back as far as it goes.
Oh God.
And where was it?
Why would you ever do that?
Well, I always do it. I always like to go back through everyone's profiles and go right back to the beginning. Because a lot of people don't like archive anything, but you can see such a change in the way. I'm not talking about Michael changed software, Michael got so much better. No, but I mean, just over the course of your first post is from, let me just see the date, August 2016. And as you scroll up and through, you can see this transition. You can see the improvement and the different styles that you've gone through, and even to go right to the top, one of your newer posts, Belly of the Beast, which I'll put in the link to the description in the description, is honestly one of my favorite posts that I've seen in a couple months. I love color, I love the type, I love the way you've done all the lockups, the badges, the general description for the process and your project, and to see that kind of improvement in 2 years with a change in software, with a change in perspective, I would assume from education you've taught yourself along the way. There is so much to be said for continued learning. And that's kind of something that I wanted to bring up because you're self-taught and I didn't realize that either. But so the fact you are self-taught, when it comes to teaching yourself, how have you managed to keep teaching yourself? What's been the drive for it? Is it just a case of seeing that idea in your head on the screen and seeing it improve? Or is it kind of like, I need to get better, like you're super driven?
I think it's a little bit of both. Just being kind of in the presence of an incredible array of designers from all across the world. And I think that's one of my favorite things about Instagram is that it's easy to get caught up in the metrics and trying to beat the algorithm, and that's never going to happen. So I try to take it for the what it is, and it just gives me so much access to everything, to be, not even to just see other designers work or see how they use shapes and how what their composition's like and how they kind of lay everything out. That's certainly an inspiration from a visual standpoint, but even just to be able to talk to people and hear what they have to say, how they got there, like what inspires them, you know, even just shoot the shit for a little bit, just touch, you know, kind of talk to people on Instagram. And not just Instagram too, on Dribbble, Behance, kind of all the different platforms, but that's how I love it. It's, you know, I try to temper the amount of actual like grinding work that I'm doing. I want to work smartly. I don't want to, you know, have this overtake my life in such a way that it kind of beats it out of me. I want to be curious and learn and do a lot of fun projects. So a lot of the work that I show on my feed, at least right now, is just fun projects that I've been working on. I have some client work that I'm currently under NDA for one, so I can't share anything yet, but I will be soon. But a lot of the stuff is just for fun, and that's part of what I was kind of goes back to what I was saying before of trying to manage the influx of projects that I have, because I want to have that time to be able to work on fun things. I'm in a unique position where I work full time, so I don't have to rely solely on my design work. So I have the opportunity to develop my skills and try new things and get better at functionality and some, you know, manners of using Illustrator that I wouldn't necessarily get to for client work. And so I was kind of joking before asking why the hell you would scroll all the way back on my Instagram, but I don't archive those for a reason, because sometimes I like to go back and look at how far I've come in such a short amount of time, relatively speaking. You know, I guess three years is a long time, but it's also not a long time in the grand scheme of things. So if I can look back and see that that's where I started and like where I am now, and for other people to look back and say, okay, look how much of an improvement that is without having gone to school or having any formal training. Like, it's just kind of goes back to the passion and the drive for it. And I don't mean to sound arrogant in any way, but that's kind of how I approach it. And I think that there's a lot to be learned from just finding inspiration in places and wanting to make yourself better.
That's you make a few very interesting points in there. The
I kind of rambled for a little bit, so sorry.
No, don't worry about it. It's interesting to hear your side. The comment you made about the algorithm and the metrics is something that I get messaged about a lot, which is, how do I get more followers? How do I achieve this? How do I get these numbers? And I'm like, well, you either do a very strict set of things and you have to keep up with the machine and you have to make half your job social media, or you can just make things you like and make great work and share it. And ultimately, it depends what you're going for. If you're going to build like a massive agency, you're never going to build a massive agency just through Instagram. Like, it's not going to happen. So to think that it's the be all and end all tool, I think I much prefer your approach, which is make something you really love, set it out nicely, put it out to the world, and see what the world thinks of it. And then also look back on your and reflect on your own work. Because as much as people draw inspiration from other Instagram accounts, they also use it as like, I'm so not good. I'm like nowhere near as good as these people. They do the comparison thing. Whereas what you're doing is going, right, well, if we look back at 2016 and we look at the gradients I've used and, oh my goodness, and these shapes and, well, this doesn't work and that typeface doesn't work. But you have that, what's the word? Like track record. You have an actual record of exactly where you started and where you are now. And although that's good for clients potentially, it must be amazing for you to be able to see that old work and see it in a positive light, at least, rather than what I think a lot of people struggle with is looking at their old work and going, oh, it was awful. I can't believe how bad I was.
Yeah, no, it's exactly, there's nothing to be ashamed of, really. Like, I made some of that stuff like 5 years ago. Why would I have any reason to be ashamed of it? I've come a long way in life in general, not even just in my design, you know, experience. And so I was literally sitting on my couch on Inkscape one night, like, you know, it's, yeah, to, and that doesn't apply to everyone, but I think it's easy to look back and be hard on yourself for the work you put out in the past. But that's just a testament to, if you're ashamed by the work that you did in the past, then that means that you're better now, which is a win. So I don't know, you know, that's kind of a good gut check to be like, if I don't like some of the things I used to put out, ask yourself why. Like, why don't I like that? Why does that look like I didn't use too many gradients? I certainly did. You know, what's wrong about the shapes or the composition? Like, how did I lay that out? You know, why isn't that as aesthetically pleasing as some of my new stuff? So I think it's a good question to ask yourself.
Yeah. And self-reflection, thinking about myself personally, I find it very difficult to do. So if I'm even a client job that I did 3-4 months ago, I struggle to go and look at it. And I think it's probably related to a bit of imposter syndrome where I'm like, ha, I didn't make that. That's amazing, or that's rubbish, and I'm like, I don't believe I did that. So I'm kind of like on the opposite end of that. But for people listening at home, the idea that you should feel bad about your previous work is just ridiculous, because at the end of the day, it's something that you made, and if you're on the path of continual learning and continual practice, you can only get better. Yeah, you only get worse if you drop it. If you drop and like don't touch it for like years and years and years. I mean, you think about I know a guy called Sean McCabe at Sean West. He used to do loads and loads of hand lettering. And he hasn't done hand lettering for clients in a long time. But you still go and see occasionally he'll put out an illustration with some hand lettering in as part of a business presentation or something like that. And it's still just as good. So some of these skills you'll never lose. But don't be ashamed when you look back on, well, if you feel ashamed, it probably means you've improved. But don't look back on it negatively. Because
no, yeah,
there's no point beating yourself up over something when you were fresh at it.
Right. You should, yeah, be proud of your logo graveyard. Like, have so many designs that didn't make the final cut. You know, like,
oh, I love that. That's a fab quote. Yeah, sorry, continue.
No, yeah, I mean, that's really what it is. Like, you should have thousands of concepts that didn't make the cut or didn't even see the light of day. Like, that's how you get better, is just putting stuff out there, drawing it, be like, yep, that's bad, moving on. You know, it's something like it. Not everything you have to put out has to be gold. And that's the reason why you go through the concepting phase, why you go through multiple rounds of revisions and with your client, or even for things that you're just doing for fun. Like, not everything is going to be the final product, and it shouldn't be. Like, some of the best designers in the world didn't just bang something out and call it a day. You know, it took a lot of revisions, and the only way you get better at doing it quicker is to do it a lot.
You got to trust the process and do it a lot. That's why we have it.
Yeah.
That's why we have the process.
It's worked for however many hundreds of years.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, yeah, even not in design. If you just think about general practice of any skill, you wouldn't go to like Usain Bolt after he's failed his first 100 meters and be like, oh, well, that was shit. Like, sorry, bud, you can't run anymore ever. It's like, okay, well, you've just lost out because he's the fastest man in the world. But you
exactly.
You see the principle, which is practice makes perfect, but practice, I don't think practice ever makes perfect, but practice will make it so that graveyard probably gets smaller.
Right.
So you're more effective every time you make something, which is a hard skill to even consider learning, let alone actually putting the time and effort in.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Conceptually, it's kind of hard to grasp because especially in this day and age, we want things to be right and we want them to be now. So to kind of have to pump the brakes a little bit and be like, this is going to take time and that's okay, is a hard thing to grasp, but it's an important thing too, for sure.
Have you ever run into that feeling where you feel like something has been, or a particular project that's made you feel that way?
I've run into one or two that I've, you know, whether it be client direction or my own creative blocks, it's been a challenge to get through it. And kind of think that I've exhausted all concepts that I could, or directions that I want to take it. I mean, honestly, I took just a few steps back, took a day or two to reset, and went back in it with a fresh view and was able to make something out of it. So, but yeah, and that happens all the time. It's easy to, because you're in this software, you're in the sketching mode, you're in the concepting phase at all hours of the day, every day, most, you know, for most people. And it's easy to get into a very limited worldview, not worldview, but you know what I'm trying to say, a very limited view of kind of the little mini world that you're living in. So if you have a certain style that you typically go to, it's easy to just exhaust all possible options in that style for a particular project. You know, so if you like, so a lot of my work is very geometric and very, you know, geometric and balanced in style, but that's not always what is required of a certain project. So it's difficult to kind of sometimes pull yourself out of that and push yourself into out of your boundaries to be able to kind of take another creative look at things.
Yeah. And we all definitely get blinded by Adobe Illustrator. Blinded by the love of that plain white artboard.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, you're totally right. The way that you take a break from something, something that I actually include in my process, and I'm very open about that. It's on my website at the moment, on my logo design process section. I explain to all of my clients that the time I work on a project does not just include me sat down tapping away at the keyboard. It also includes the 3 days here and the 3 days there where I just pin it up on the wall and I go and do something else, or I go for a walk, or I take my sketch pad to the beach or to the park and I keep the design on the wall for a few days and you go, oh yeah, maybe I'll adjust this bit, and you draw on it a little, or you add this or you add that. And the time that you spend thinking is just as important, particularly for creative services. So yeah, as Michael says, like, take a step back, maybe get someone else to have a look at it. Maybe say, just pin it up on a wall and walk away from it for a few days.
Yeah, no, it's incredibly helpful. And a lot of the times, yeah, I'll come up with a concept that I think is the one, and then I'll set it aside for a few days and then completely forget about it because I have something new that just came up after kind of have a creative refresh or creative reset. So, and that's a beautiful thing I wasn't even mad about having to walking away from that concept because I had something better. And so you never know, that doesn't always happen, but it's important to at least put in the conscious effort to take a creative break from things to be able to reset and kind of come back in with fresh eyes. And also, I liked what you said about having other people take a look at it too. I try to do that a lot because it's easy for designers to look at things solely from a designer's perspective. But if you lose sight of the fact that this is going to be in front of real people, that's crippling, because if you lose sight of the fact that there's a target audience for this, and while you may think it looks great or works or, is a fit for the project, if you show it to a friend, they're like, I have no idea what that is, then that could be a problem. So it's important to get other people's perspectives.
Yeah. Something that a lot of people don't do. They just kind of sit in their own bubble, don't they? And when you're surrounded by yourself and all the stuff that you know and all the same stuff on the same walls or the same books or the same pages that you go to or the same designers things you go to for inspiration, that bubble just becomes, I hate using the term, but it just becomes an echo chamber, and you just end up rehashing stuff you've already done, which is something that actually happened with we still don't fully know what happened. Did you see the Facebook Calibra logo problem the other day? Did you hear about this?
No.
So I'll just for
have I been living under a rock?
Maybe. So basically Facebook launched, I'll do a quick summary for you, but Facebook launched a cryptocurrency. And the logo the logo they used for it was almost identical, apart from a color change, to a logo for a similar finance app. But they were made by the same studio.
Oh, I did see that. I saw that on Brand New under consideration. Yeah.
It was made by the same studio. And I haven't checked on it. I haven't checked the update. It's a few weeks old now. But I wouldn't have been surprised if what's happened is exactly what we've just been talking about, where someone's been stuck in a file, someone's pulled up an old design, not really checked it. They've been in their own bubble. They've not had someone really come in and double check everything. And they just shipped it.
And it's incredible.
Firstly, it's absolutely hilarious that one of the biggest companies in the world and a design studio have messed up this bad. I can't imagine that studio is going to be around for much longer.
Nope.
But it's also the fact that it was allowed to happen. And it's what happens when you do just stick to the same things over and over. You don't go and explore and be inspired by other things. When you don't take breaks and actually give yourself social time to interact with other people. Like, these are all the signs that, these are all the things that I would expect lead up to a problem like, oh, we've used the same logo twice for two different companies.
Yeah, and it's wild that they were so strikingly similar. And to your point, maybe it was a question of turnover, maybe like the same creative director and wasn't there and a different designer made it, and somehow it passed inspection or lack thereof. But it's mind-boggling. And that, yeah, just to your point, that kind of shows you that how limiting that can be when you reach the same solution for two different projects. And even though they're in the same space, like, they probably had slightly different briefs or visions for the brand, but somehow the same output was created, and that's troubling.
Yeah, my instant thought is one of three different things. It's Zuckerberg gave them a lot of money, one, and said, we just want this. Two, they didn't check. Or three, they just went into the old concept files and just dragged out an old logo and were like, hey, this could work for them.
Yeah, because haven't seen this before.
Yeah, I've heard of that before. There's multiple designers from like the 80s, big in the 80s and the 90s. They'd say that we keep everything on file, everything's logged, even concepts we've never used, because there's every potential it'll be perfect fit for another client. And that's fine, so long as you don't overlap them. And it's like, someone's just clear.
Use it for another client in the same space.
Yeah, exactly. Like, come on. But yeah, so to kind of move away from that a little bit, I just wanted to touch on one thing before we wrapped up today's show was you talked a bit about inspiration and where you find it. Obviously, you've mentioned brand new for an under consideration for all that kind of new stuff coming out. But when you're looking through through the internet and Instagram and stuff, where and what inspires you the most? Is it other design work, or do you, I don't know, do something like Ethan Fender does or Ben Howes does, where they go out and they go hiking or they have a hobby or they do something like that? What gets your spark going?
Yeah, I'm not quite on the same hiking plan as.
Don't worry, I'm not either.
And Ben, yeah, I'd like to be. That sounds pretty nice. But I know I do like the outdoors and stuff, and I say I find a lot of my inspiration from. Nature, like just a lot, as you could probably see, a lot of my logos and most of like my stuff for fun is just, you know, variations of kind of geometric style animals, because I love designing animal logos. And while I don't get a chance to design them for real things very often, so it's fun to just use that as a creative outlet every once in a while. But I try to look back at a lot of vintage things. Not necessarily in person. Like I know Draplin likes going junking and finding things like that. And I don't necessarily have the time or the accessibility to a lot of that at the moment. I love just going through like the Library of Congress page and finding old like vintage posters and things like that. And I love the Art Deco movement. So a lot of the artists like A.M. Cassandra and kind of artists that really pioneered that geometric style, it's still so relevant today. And that's kind of like, it really fits a lot of what, or actually it kind of fits what the style that I work in, but I'm also partially inspired by that. So a lot of those old, posters and like wartime propaganda and things like that, and just the way they lay things out is inspiring. But then, of course, I'll get a lot of inspiration for more modern styles from modern designers.
You've picked out the wartime posters, because it's something that a lot of people don't notice. If you go back and look at some of, I know it's listed literally as propaganda because it is, but the way they design propaganda, it has to share a message. It has to share a certain idea and it has to get your attention quickly. So to look at that for like type layouts and stuff must be amazing, and colors and shapes.
Yeah. I mean, that is like advertising in its purest form, really. It's trying to convince people to do something with a visually striking message.
Yeah. You can convince someone to go to war. Like you can convince them to probably buy your product or work with you.
That's like the ultimate advertising campaign, is to literally say, hey, lay down your life, or hey, we need all of these people to make socks for the soldiers. You know, it's crazy. And they put on so much time and effort and creative thought into those posters because they had to be so compelling. I don't know if you're familiar with Jean Carlou, who is a French Art Deco graphic designer, but he did a lot of like the wartime propaganda for the French military during World War II. And just some of his compositions are striking, and he has a couple of very cool illustrations, like of a ram and a buffalo head, I think it is, that's really using the geometric style and distilling an animal head into a very, very modern looking composition. And so, yeah, a lot of the stuff from back then is just very still relevant today. Yeah, as you said, like the type layouts and stuff, and even how they kind of broke convention, if there even was much of a convention at the time to kind of put those things out there.
Man, you're gonna have to send me some of these because I need I need all these names. I need all these pages. And going through the Library of Congress, I guess I could, like, if I think about the UK equivalent, that would be like going through the British Library or Natural History Museum, or all the archives for that would be amazing too. That's a really good idea. That's just sparked something in my brain to go and look at that later.
Yeah, no, it's great. They have a very searchable website. So if you were just to type in like propaganda, it would just have an arc. And you could choose, I think, the file type that it shows up to if you want. Like if you're looking for manuscripts or you're looking for images, you can go through and just kind of, they have whatever they have on there. And then from there, that's not like the first place I go to often, but because not everything needs to be vintage inspired, but I do like to put together a lot of mood boards and stuff for my clients that kind of span a range of things, whether it's whether it's nature or more modern art, vintage art. It's kind of all, I'm kind of all over the place.
Drawing stuff from everywhere, but that's not a bad thing for sure. So Michael, thank you so much for joining us today. Yeah. And for sharing some of your story. And if you don't, go and check out the Library of Congress website or send us your favorite propaganda poster. I'm going to be a bit miffed. So please get on and do that. So Michael, where can people find you on the internet?
So you can find me at peanutfreepanda on Instagram, Michael Penda on Dribbble, and I'll provide you with the link to my my portfolio because I don't know that off the top of my head.
Sure. All those links are going to be down into the description. Excellent. Today. So go and check out Michael's work at Peanut Free Panda. Go and bask in the glow of his wonderful personal brand logo. I love it so much. And yeah, if you've been listening to today's show on a platform that allows you to review the podcast, whether that is Apple Podcast or any other, please leave us a 5-star review, and even just a comment about what you thought about today's show would be fab. You can find me at CFowlerDesign or use the hashtag FowlerHour to interact with the show. So thank you very much to everyone who's going to be listening today, and we'll see you guys next time. Bye for now.